just before that happened, what was going on inside in the mill at the time?
Yeah.
At that particular time.
Well, the liquidator was offering packages. He wanted clean possession of the mill, the property, the premises, and the equipment and the stock inside. So there was pressure from some workers to just settle, get as much money, get a redundancy deal and get out. Others, like myself, we said, no, we're not selling our jobs. We want to fight for jobs. So we had this kind of a tension within the workforce. And generally speaking, it probably would have been more the white collar would have been more for the redundancy, whereas the general officer would be more militant and more job orientated, probably because they had less prospects of re-employment. And as the campaign went on during 82, there was negotiations going on to try and release, and they did release. We did release the materials, which may have been a mistake, because as soon as materials were gone, we had no bargaining chip. And then suddenly,
who was buying those materials?
He was selling them off to other customers, paper printers, so, whatever. Yeah.
So you had nothing to bargain with then?
We only had the possession of an empty mill, yeah. But we still had a promise from the government that they would buy it and reopen it.
What government was in power at the time?
Well, the government that came in was the Fianna Fáil government immediately. And we persecuted Albert Reynolds for 82. And he obviously rode back on his commitments and he found all sorts of excuses why they couldn't. It was the legal problem.
Why had he made false promises then?
He had given an undertaking that it would be open by the 1st of June 1982. And it was in writing and given to the Irish Congress of Trade Unions. And then he reneged on it. So not only were we a militant workforce, but we had the full might, if you like. We had the trade union leaders, officialdom, on the hook as well.
Yeah.
They were being insulted and betrayed. So they had to back us.
Can you give me a rough idea of the numbers of people that were involved?
Yeah, there was. I think the workforce was around 460, 470. And the general workers, union representation, would have been around 280, 300. And obviously, as the campaign went on, less and less people turned up. We had a general meeting every Saturday in the Scouts Den down the village, and they dwindled. But people got jobs, but they still came in and did their shift. They could come in at night or come in on the weekends and do their occupation, you know. That was interesting. We also had a lot of pickets around. Now, Clondalkin Group, which grew out of the paper mills, had five or six or maybe more entities around the city, which we picketed. In particular, one up in Swiftbrook, up in Sagard or Ratcool. And we were injuncted. We were brought to court. Six of us, I think, were injuncted. And we were allowed picket, but we had to stop calling for the banning of imports.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. The judge ruled that it was a trade dispute.
Who were you dealing in Swiftbrook? Was it Tommy Hogan, by any chance?
No idea. I would have only... All I knew of Swiftbrook was I went up there with a picket one day.
Okay.
And stayed there for a few days, and then I got the summons to the courts.
But why would you do that? Why would you get these other companies involved?
Well, when you're in a struggle, you try to get as much force as you can on your side. So the idea behind trade union is that if an employer has a grievance with you try and hurt him as much as you can. So he shut down the mills, but he had these other factories. So if we could get them to come out, that would bring him to the table quicker.
Okay. And were you affiliated to any political organisation yourself?
I wasn't, no. I was, if you like, an independent Trotskyist. I had Trotskyist leanings, socialist leanings. But outside,
a member of the Workers' Party?
No. I actually slated the Workers' Party. I made shite of Pat Rabbit at a meeting up in the community centre, which I don't think you ever forgive me. But anyway, there were some Labour Party people. There were a lot of Fianna Fáil people, because I think the Mills was a Fianna Fáil establishment in its time. And there would have been, I don't know, maybe some Fine Gaelers in middle management or whatever. But it was only political in the sense that it was a small p political.
Yes.
You know.
How long did that standoff take?
Well, we occupied the mill for a year, more or less. The government fell, I think, around November. There was another election towards the end of the year. And Labour got back in with Fine Gael. And we went to meet Vic Spring and reminded them that they had a commitment. We went, eventually got a meeting with John Bruton, who was the new Minister for Industry and Energy. And the first thing he said was, well, now, you know, you're not going to like what I'm going to say to you, or worse to that effect. So he stalled and kept putting us on the long finger. And eventually, with all the goings on, there were some negotiations between the IDA and different interested parties. But eventually in the workforce, two individuals decided they were going on hunger strike. Brian Nolan and Miley Spate. Miley Spate was a militant shop steward, very good bloke. Brian Nolan was kind of a shop steward for the clerical workers and a local family, and I think he was Fianna Fáil family. And they went on hunger strike, and we had a meeting about it. I remember the action committee, and I was totally against it because I said what would happen would be the struggle would switch from trying to save the mill to save the hunger strikers.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what happened. So as the hunger strike went up 15 days, and Brian Nolan was getting quite frantic, and his family were coming in every day to, what are you doing to save my Brian? And I can remember Gerry Cowardly telling him to F off and get out. Miley Spate, I have no doubt, would have went all the way. Miley was a very determined individual. And I think the trade union leadership knew this as well. So a deal was cobbled up with these Freeman McCormick, Canadian investors, to come in to buy the mill. And suddenly we were summoned into a meeting in the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, and the deal was put to us. And I knew it was a pup, but was I going to go back and tell the hunger strikers, no lads, carry on and die, you know? So we had to go back to the mill, and I can remember Miley Spade coming to me there. He said, Paul, now you wouldn't lie to me, he says, is this a genuine offer? And I had to say yes. So the hunger strike was called off, and eventually this new management came in, and they started on a phase basis, brought workers back in, got the mill going for about another year, and then they collapsed. And again, I think it was around Christmas time again, we were on our Christmas holidays, and we got the letter in the post, bye-bye, no job.
Okay, but hold on now, I've just got to get it straight, that the before the Canadian company came in, the deal was struck with who? With the government, is it?
You see, the government had bought the place.
So it was the government, who tried to source a company.
Yeah, yeah.
Why didn't they look for Smurfit, who would have been an ideal?
He wasn't interested. He probably knew the truth of the matter. Nobody was really interested unless you gave them a huge handout. And this company coming in must have got huge grants. And I don't know, maybe they fiddled the book when they were there. I don't know how.
Was there something underhanded going on there?
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't have been party to the negotiations with the IDA and the various grants and concessions.
Because they only lasted a
year. They only lasted a year. The previous sales manager took over, John Kilduff. Mm. And he tried to make a go of it. They did sell for a while. But then you had huge energy costs and everything else, and they just couldn't compete. They were frozen out of the market, I suppose. They were undercut by all the big suppliers from England and elsewhere.
So this was about 1980.
That would have been
83.
No, 83. 83. Yeah. So
property at that time wasn't. It didn't reach its boom. So no.
But the interesting thing from a trade union standpoint to me was that it did galvanise the trade union movement in the country. We had huge support. We had delegations from all over the country coming up to meet us. We sent teams around. I went up to the DeLorean workers who had occupied the DeLorean factory. They came down and we had a joint march in Dublin with them and the Ranks mill workers. Do you know, there was huge kind of working class solidarity. It's gone now. And I kind of knew at the time that if we were beaten, this was the last throw of the dice for, if you like, independent militant trade unionism. Because after that, the trade unions are now bought into, they've done away with secondary picketing. They're subject to huge fines, so they won't jeopardise their property, their assets. You know, so they won't support anything militant anymore. But the solidarity shown and great support in the community.
Okay. But was there, when you were told the second time that this is it, what happened after that?
Well, what happened after that was, I went my way. I just said I wasn't fighting anymore for it. I can't remember exactly, but what happened over a period of a couple of weeks. What are we going to do? Are we going to occupy again? And some people did occupy it. And then this developer, Jim Mansfield, came on the scene. He wanted to buy the site and scrap the machinery. And that was done. And the mill was knocked down, and we now have the shopping centre there. But along the way, we had got a redundancy payments from the liquidator, you know. And then I remember we got a pension payment because we're in a pension scheme. So there's a few little lump sums come in now and again. But by and large, the struggle had more or less died. You know, obviously you can't keep people unemployed for years. You have to sustain families.
So who bought the machinery as soon as it closed
down? I went down and took a photograph of...
No, I didn't even see it.
I can see the guys now. Let me think. It was Sherry Courtney, Ollie Lanny, Cal, Connor.
Little Jimmy Delaney, I'd say.
Yeah. There was only about five or six. So you weren't a member of that.
No,
that's another area we have to go to.
Okay, that's fine.
But I believe the machine. But Brunkard told you a bit about them.
He did.
Brunkard, the engineer.
Yeah.
He was probably involved in valuing them or something. But they were all being strapped up and going to India and everywhere else.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about that.